The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands 69, Black Harvest. Ryan's company emerges from a gateway in the Midwest with a badly wounded comrade.
Let him rest. His wounds are infected.
That only pre-dark medicine can save. The Baron of a local vill has pre-dark healing drugs.
What kind of drugs do you need?
But the real money's in a more deadly drug, the addictive Deathlands Bang.
I'm not talking about that kind of drug.
Where drugs and riches go, death shadows every step.
We can't stay here. They'll chill us in a heartbeat.
And moments of passion are dangerous and brief.
Touch me there.
And there?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes.
No matter which side of a firefight you stand on.
Over here!
Deathlands number 69, Black Harvest. Seven Unabridged Hours in graphic audio. The movie in your mind.
Black Harvest will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Black Harvest. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book. The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands 70, Vengeance Trail.
Spread out.
Ryan Carter. Gunned down and left for dead by the new provisional U.S. Army. A ruthless force commanded by a brilliant general with a propensity for casual mass murder.
Kill them all!
And a vision to rebuild America.
This will be a new country!
Waging war from a pre-dark, fusion-powered armored locomotive, this man is about to unlock the secrets of the gateways. As the rest of Ryan's group stand powerless. Except for one. Hope may be lost for Christy Roth, but for her, revenge is enough.
This fucker's chilled meat. Chilled meat.
Vengeance Trail will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Vengeance Trail. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Away across the night, the great paired mountains spewed arcs of orange fire. Their fury could be felt as well as heard, a continual mutter of thunder, punctuated by blasts that pained Raven's ears. If the fury of the old gods wasn't soon appeased with the blood and souls of the evildoers, so the priest Howling Wolf said, that pillar would grow to hide the heavens, choke sun and moon and stars, plunging all beneath into gloom. It had happened once before, during the time legend called the Great Sky Dark. Only this time, Howling Wolf said, the dark would never end. Reflected hoops of orange, distorted and wavering, were the only hints that a great lake lay like a discarded obsidian mirror between the Fire Mountains and the Hog's Back Ridge behind which the Horde was camped. Although the eyes of the man named Raven were no longer so keen close up as they had been in his youth, his far vision remained to justify his name. If he didn't gaze toward the flame fountains for a time, he could just make out tiny fugitive glimmers of light closer at hand, here and there down in the valley, and even in the rotted corpse of the dead city itself, which lay in the lake like a broken giant sprawled face down in the pond that had drowned him. Dead no more. Men once more crawled, like maggots among the great bones of metal and stone and pale glass. Screams beat like the buffets of the wind at Raven's bare, bronzed back. In the great encampment, captives were being cut and burned in sacrifice to the ancient gods. When the wind blew one way, it stank of sulfur. Another way, and it reeked of blood and fear and charred flesh. At such times, Raven chose to walk away from the camp when he could. He was a hunter, a warrior, living in a land devoid of mercy. Had he ever shrunk from the most brutal necessity, he would never have lived long enough to take a man's name. It was the necessity of such cruelty he questioned. His absences from the rituals of offering didn't please the priest or his acolytes. They had dropped hints that Raven of all people should display more piety. He ignored their threats. For he of all people they dared not harm. Not the flesh and blood of the very one whom, Howling Wolf said, the old forgotten gods, so thirsty for blood and pain, had sent to save the people and all the world. Over the cries of terrible anguish, he could hear the priest's voice, knew the sense of the words, even though he was not close enough to actually hear them. Once more, the wicked seek to probe the lost evil secrets, to wake the dark powers that once devastated the world. They would revive the city, which forsook the gods and mocked the sky with its haughty towers. If we, the chosen, do not stop them, the wickedness they unleash this time will destroy the world utterly.
And so it might be.
It was certainly true that the valley in which the lake lay was green and fertile, despite the frequent shaking of the earth and the lethal clouds that sometimes flowed over it from the Fire Mountains. Likewise was it true that the high country where the people had dwelt, time out of memory, was becoming uninhabitable, racked by alternating drought and terrible storms that blew down from the lands of death to the north, with their strange hissing rains that could melt the skin from a man's bones. The people and the dwellers in the valley had coexisted, not always in peace. Sometimes they traded, as often they raided one another. It didn't escape Raven that in exterminating the people of the valley for their presumption and wickedness, the true folk could ensure their own survival. Indeed, Howling Wolf's preachings made sure the fact escaped no one. So this great endeavor, so great that it joined not only true folk and witches, but the very beasts of the wasteland, wasn't just good, it was necessary. But as he leaned on his flintlock, in the night between fires, Raven's spirit was troubled. He glanced back at the camp. Not all the shapes dancing black against firelight were fully human. It was strange to see true men and witches together, except linked in deadly combat. But in many ways, that was one of the least strange of the changes that had come. And maybe the strangest of all was the boy. He had been different from the first. No child of the people had ever been so pale. He was different, and so by ancient immutable tradition, he should have been taken into the desert and left beneath the spines of a Magay. There, either the coyotes and vultures would take him, or the witches would find him and take him in, raise him as one of their own. For indeed, that was where the witches sprang from, the sons and daughters of true men who had been born tainted with difference and so had to be cast out. But no one could bring himself to do the ancient duty, expose the boy to his fate. For anyone who looked upon him, unnatural though his appearance was instantly filled with a vast sense of well-being and love. Those at whom he smiled would sooner hurl themselves into a live lava flow than allow the least harm to befall him. He had such power, though never spoke a word. As time passed, the child grew larger, although his form altered little. He maintained the proportions of an infant. It became obvious that he could somehow control the very feelings of those around him. In time, they would learn that this power extended not only to true men, but to witches and even wild beasts. By not exiling him as a newborn, the people had in effect judged that his difference wasn't a taint, wasn't a mark of evil, as it was with witches. Therefore, he had to be holy. He was a gift of the heavens, that much was sure. But to what purpose? None could say. None until the boy was 10 summers old, and the tall, gaunt man who covered his head and shoulders in the skin of a great wolf had appeared out of the south. He had taught the people the meaning of the gift. When he spoke, in his deep, compelling voice, with the blood of sacrificial victims glistening on his cheeks in the firelight, few could doubt the truth of what he said. But Raven was among those few. The boy's father, Two Whirlwinds, had never recovered from the shock of seeing what he had sired. Despite the people's judgment that the child was holy, he had felt shamed, tainted himself. He had begun to drink too much Magay wine, and when the child was 2 summers old, had been surprised, dismembered, and devoured by a pack of giant javelinas. Raven, elder brother to the boy's mother, had assumed the role of father. It was a role he welcomed. From the very first, it seemed, there had been a special bond between the two. It took no mystic power to make him love the child as if he were his own. And so, though he was little given to fruitless questioning, Raven wondered. If it were all true, if the boy had been sent by forgotten gods to restore to the people their ancient glory, a glory that not even the eldest of the people had witnessed, nor even heard tales of, but that Howling Wolf assured them was their birthright, why hadn't Raven, who raised the boy as a father, known of it before the strange priest came?